This is Bea Arthur, and you're listening to the Be the Change podcast, sponsored by Sonos. All right, and we're a go. Let's hey, everybody, welcome. My name is Bea Arthur, and this is our very first episode of Be the Change, Sonos' very first talk show podcast for therapy. I'm a licensed therapist, and I'm the founder and CEO of The Difference, where we believe the right talk at the right time can make all the difference. And I'm really honored to partner with Sonos, who believes in the mission of mental health, making it as accessible and sustainable as possible. And so we really just wanted to make the conversation around mental health more mainstream. So we're meeting you right on the subway or on your couch, wherever you at, and you are very lucky to join us for our very first episode. This episode is called The Race Card, and I am so honored and excited to have our very first episode, the lovely and amazing Takeisha Way. Hey, girl.
Hey.
Welcome, Takeisha. So you are a licensed social worker, therapist, executive coach, speaker, and advocate for people of color.
That's the power right, black people. That's right.
Yes, welcome. So I really wanted to have you on this. As I saw you speak with Dr. Joy at Therapy for Black Girls Live. Shout out to Therapy for Black Girls Live.
Yes, Dr. Joy, you're amazing.
She's the truth, and you are also the truth, because you speak about how America, we're just going to get right into it, how pretty America much has become a trauma-inducing environment for marginalized people.
Yes.
So I've seen the same thing in the last 2 years. I mean, let's just get to it. Like, last 2-3 years since the election, really 4 years, because it's been going on so long since the rhetoric, which is really where most of the power and the shift and kind of all the anxiety in our community has gone up, is really just about being actively targeted, actively shitted on, actively hated. You know, it's become very hostile, and that seeps in. So how do you feel about everything that's going on with the psychology of being a black person in America?
Wow, big question. You know, I think on the forefront, you have, like you were saying, this explicit conversation that's happening now. It's been implicit for centuries.
There's little things, and now there's big things.
Yeah, and there, I mean, there's been, you know, a clearly a more public shift to making it seem like it's okay for people to express their rage and pain by murdering people of color, particularly black people.
Murdering them, calling the cops on them.
Yeah, calling the cops on them for being alive, for walking into their schools, for expressing any kind of understanding of critical consciousness, even if they're 11 years old. So yeah, so it's a very traumatic, like you were saying, a very traumatic environment and ambiance and country for many people. And I think that that trauma, like you were just bringing forward, it's something that we don't always experience overtly. You know, trauma is something we experience on a chronic and collective way basis. So, you know, we see a video of another person being attacked at a parking lot, or another person being attacked in a grocery store. Or we learn about a young man being, you know, murdered while standing in line, you know, at a big box store, you know, just for, you know, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, or being made to look suspicious. And those stories kind of, we collect those stories in our mind and we store them as evidence for our own safety, you know, just like we would, just like our ancestors would store that a little red berry is a dangerous berry that would kill somebody. And then it gets passed on through oral history. And next thing you know, it's just innate. Like, you just, you find yourself in the woods, you see a red berry, and something inside of you instinctively will tell you, like, that's not right. A lot of times we feel like that around, because of white supremacy, white people can create that feeling for a lot of people, this feeling of like, oh, danger. And it is instinctual. It isn't, it's something that comes up because of what we've learned and what we see on a regular basis. And it's something that is very, very subtle, but you'll find that it impacts your bodily functions. It impacts your, you know, your pituitary gland. It impacts your thyroid. It impacts your posture. It impacts your eating habits. You know, it goes on and on and on. And what you're really trying to do, you're in this constant state of stress and survival because of these signals that you keep getting throughout the day
that you're not safe. Wow. And so it's interesting because you and I were talking before, some of the numbers have gone up, but that it used to be, unfortunately, that the suicide rates would be Asian, white, then brown and black people. And for the first time ever, they're finding that adolescents under 13 are killing themselves more than black adolescents under 13 are killing themselves more than their white counterparts. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised by the statistic because in an era where there's more representation than ever, I mean, look at us, you know, look at all this color and all this glory. All this Fenty, you know, and then, there's so much more representation than when we were growing up. How, what is the message that it's subconsciously entering these young minds and making them not want to be here?
You know, marketing, propaganda, there's a consistent story that you're not good enough, you're not valued, you're not worthy, nobody hears you. And we know that resources are disproportionately allocated across the country and cities. We know, for example, in New York City, there are neighborhoods that have lower life expectancies just because of where they are and who lives there. And it has nothing, there's no reason why a city as rich as New York City would have so many what we call disparities or inequities in health outcomes. When you know that these things, just because there are representations of success, it doesn't mean that the overall system and the overall environment is designed to support all black lives. And that children in families are receiving the support and their overall environment to allow for them to thrive, to allow for their best outcomes. And we know that, we also know that the more successful black women become, the higher the stress burden is, the more likely they're experiencing microaggressions. And sometimes even there are more, there's a higher chance of having poor birth outcomes and having challenges. We know this from Serena. We know that Serena had a hard time, you know, having her child. We know that there are more than one examples and cases where the family, the black family itself suffers in like insurmountable, it seems like, extraordinary challenges just to maintain itself, and we know that if the microaggressions are going up with the education, with the opportunity, we also know that poor health outcomes go up. So we also know that there are high correlations between highly successful women of color and poor health outcomes.
Wow.
Because the stressful environments become so chronic.
Absolutely.
Like I was saying before, around trauma, being collective and being in trauma-inducing environments where you're experiencing microaggressions, where you're constantly in fear, where you're constantly being judged, being watched. There's hypervigilance around your work. And you've been fed this story. Oh, this is the land of the free. Like,
You made it.
You made it. Look at all this opportunity. And if you're, especially if you're a first generation professional, you get into the workplace and you're not having these dinner table conversations. And so now you're trying to also figure it out. You're trying to figure out your next step, how to do all those things. All those things have unintended consequences and ripple effects on the generation that you're trying to raise differently. Yeah. And you're putting those children now, they're not experiencing maybe all of the chronic experiences you might have had as a child, but they're experiencing something even more painful, which is, why not me? Like, why is this happening to me? Like, I'm great. My mom's great. We're living in this great community. My dad's awesome. Like, why am...
Because we're keeping the pain to ourselves. We're keeping it inside, right? And
you can't,
and it's so interesting because, yeah, that's the thing. You're doing well, and it seems like you're doing well, but as we know, there is no physical health without mental health. And so it starts to show up in different ways, especially when we talk about microaggressions. And so just for our audience, if nobody knows what microaggressions are, I actually was on the research team with Dr. Gerald Sue at Columbia University, who created the term microaggressions and worked with Bill Clinton on the race initiative. And so basically what they are is unintentional and invisible acts of racism. And so there's three different kinds. There's actually microaggressions, microinsults, and microinvalidations. So microinvalidations might be dismissing somebody, like, you know, like, wow, you speak so well, or like, oh no, that didn't happen because you were black, you're tripping, you know, like, you're one of the good ones, you know. So that is like still like an act of violence, but it's unintended and invisible and well-intentioned for the most part. Microinsults are exactly that, right? Like, wow, you're so like, Joe Biden, as much as we love him, when Obama first came on the scene, was like, wow, that black guy speaks so well, you know, and people don't understand why it's calling someone articulate might not be taken the right way, but the assumption that you would make that exclamation would be based on the fact that you didn't expect me to speak well. So, and then microaggressions are more outright. And so in the professional workplace, because we do have a caller every week who we like to help with our expert, we talk about how it can show up in the professional environment. So how are we how are women and people experiencing that?
Just like you described, you know, like, you know, you go in to do a job, you may even be more qualified than the next person, but you're not going to get the same opportunity. And there's way more skepticism around mm-hmm. your qualifications and your credentials. And there's way more, you know, let me just pair you up with this person just to make sure, show you the ropes, you know, get your feet wet. And you're, even though the person that they may be pairing you up with could easily be, you know, a mentee of yours, could be an intern of yours. Yeah. You also see, you know, people who have certain degrees who request certain kind of, like, so you feel, for example, there will be a Black woman who is a doctor who says, please, you know, I prefer if you call me by, you know, please call me Dr. so-and-so. And the first thought is like, oh, this is so presumptuous, blah, blah, blah. And they'll still call you whatever they want to call you based on their culture. So no, we're just going to call you Sue because that's what we like to do. And you find yourself being discredited. So then now you're being considered as Sue in a place where everybody already doesn't believe that you could possibly be a doctor. They don't want to even acknowledge that you're a doctor. And on top of that, they're skeptical about everything you say. The other way that happens is like when people are, they can't hear you until they say it. So then you say something and then they repeat exactly what you say. And then they ask you if you understand. That kind of stuff is so demoralizing. It like really, really breaks down your morale. It really breaks down, you know, your efficacy and your agency. And it could create these intense environments where you're not being promoted, you're being skipped over for opportunities to be on projects. You know, you're hearing people talk about the neighborhoods that you live in as like bad neighborhoods or like undesirable spaces and these people. That kind of language comes out naturally in these spaces, and it's over and over. It's like experiencing daggers and daggers into your spiritual body.
And of course it becomes your spiritual body, yes. And of course that becomes your reality because perception is reality.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right.
So that's the thing. Like, it's really hard to be able to talk about it in a without getting emotional. Otherwise, you risk being called the angry Black woman. But, you know, we do need to talk about it to help understand it so it doesn't affect us so much. So that's what we're going to do with today's caller. So today's caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, caller. So we like to keep it really personal. Obviously, we like to protect any identifying details and keep it as anonymous and confidential as possible. Just want to say for the record, even though we are both therapists and this is a therapy talk show, you are not getting therapy. Do we understand each other, caller?
Oh, yes, I understand.
That's called consent. Thank you, caller. And so I like to start this part with, what's your Finsta? Because we all know on the gram, in order to be your true self, you have to give people your fake Insta. So what's your Finsta for this episode?
It's Regine.
Ooh,
Regine. Can I tell y'all a quick story about meeting Erica Alexander at South by Southwest?
Okay.
No, because we're short on time. This is Regine's time. I wouldn't do that to her. Black people are big on respect, so I'm not going to do that to you. Okay. So Regine, my name is B, and I want to change your life. How can we help you?
Well, so I've been practicing yoga for about 4 years now, and I actually got my yoga certification 2 months ago, and I'm just...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I love a flexible Black queen.
Ooh. Oh, no, yeah. Yoga definitely came to me at the right time and the right moment in my life. But my question is, like, how do I, especially as, like, a Black woman, navigate in a field that should be for everyone, but it kind of isn't for everyone. In my experiences being in like a studio predominantly white, because I'm usually always the only Black person in a yoga studio, which is kind of unfortunate, but I just don't know how to really like kind of navigate through that, because I'm used to, you know, working with different kinds of people. I work in corporate America for the moment, and but navigating in a space of wellness that's supposed to be for everyone, but it generally isn't necessarily for everyone. It's kind of disheartening, and it's a little just like I've been taken aback by it a little bit. So I just don't know. Like, I would love advice on how to kind of, I guess, deal with that in that space.
I think the first question, you know, so as a social worker, what we do is generally we set up a conversation with anyone, and we really want to get clear on their desired outcome. So what is your goal? So I'll be asking you questions, but the reason why is just that if we can create very clearly in our mind a picture of what that destination looks like or what that experience looks like, then we can talk about this navigation concept. So I'm wondering, when you're saying that you want to, you know, navigate this space, where would you like to end, and what would you like to feel in the space as a yoga instructor?
Well, I definitely want to feel welcomed. At some point, I'm going to start teaching, but in the meantime, I still want to be able to take up spaces that, you know, invite me to learn in yoga and meditation and all that, like, you know, wellness stuff. But I'm just still kind of like, I don't feel welcomed, and I don't feel like, it's weird, I just don't feel like it's for me on certain occasions. Like, every experience that I have, every studio that I have, I've been to, isn't quite the same, but the majority of them are, which is a little kind of just not okay with me. So it's just like me being in wellness and wanting to kind of pursue, not even, I don't want to say side hustle, but just pursue that journey.
Can you give us an example of some of the things that just on the low happen?
Well, not necessarily where I got my certification, but it's a studio that I went to, and I was taking two classes back to back, and I finished with the first class, but I got up to, like, I can't quite remember exactly where I did, but I got up and I went back to, like, my seat, but then this woman, and she was Caucasian, and she kind of, like, pushed her mat on mine as if, like, I was done, and she knew that I was still there. So it's just like things like that happen all the time that I get overlooked, and I get that weird, like, oh, why are you here? Kind of, you don't have to say it, but it's like your energy kind of like speaks it.
You're a visitor.
So it's just
not
like things like that
here.
That are very just like, yeah, like it's just weird energy and weird.
It's unfortunate because within wellness industries, I mean, obviously, since we're all human, like, wellness is by definition meant to be welcoming, right? Yes, but we all know, especially with yoga, you know, was created in India, so it wasn't started by white people, but white people did invent yoga pants. They didn't invent yoga, but they did invent yoga pants. And so as a result with math, they seen
appropriation.
Listen, my whole life is white. I mean, it's like, we love our non-melanin friends, but, you know, when they are the default, sometimes it does seem like you're a visitor. They're like, you're not immediately welcome the way they are. And it's something that's really hard to explain without just feeling it invisibly.
Because, I mean, I think this is part of the knowledge that we get to share, which is, one, having that close knowledge of self. Like, I love a strong Black conscious person who is confident in the critical consciousness around race theory and understands that, just like we were talking about earlier, that red berry, you are intuitively picking up on racism, on internalized racism and overt racism. Yeah. And then you've been socialized to think that saying anything about your human right or civil right is playing the race card and being extra and doing the most. And
is the race card. You know, white people are uncomfortable talking about race, but so are Black people now. We don't know really because we aren't allowed to talk about it, so we don't know how. So how would she, like, without... we don't want to take up too much space. We don't want to offend anybody. We don't want to make it more than it is, but it's a big deal to her.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first step is to make it clear, you know, you have to name the offense. So you know, we've been taught not to name the offense. We've been taught not to, you know, it's in our deep, you know, we were carried in our grandmother's wombs, right? A lot of our grandmothers were carried, they were carried and carried in spaces of rape culture and spaces where their bodies were taken by force, where their children were taken by force, where their husbands were murdered before them. These types of things are in our DNA. It's in our blood. And so we do have this home training around how to show up in public spaces. But then what also we also have available to us is our current racial critical consciousness, so race consciousness. And so we get to think about, okay, who do I want to be in this situation with this other person? And now I'm going to be, Michelle Obama always talks about going high. Now I get to decide, what am I going to be a stand for? Do I want to be a stand for all Black people in the whole race? Do I want to make a statement about racism right now? Or am I making am I doing some micro healing for myself in this moment and standing up for myself as a Black woman, as a Black leader, as a Black teacher, as a Black yoga instructor, as a queen? Do I get to then say to her, excuse me, I don't know if you noticed that my things were still here, and let her experience you being fully present in your humanity. And then in that space, you don't have to teach her anything. You're just going to remind her. And then once you do that, this kind of like activation of your self-power is going to get fired up.
Yeah.
And you'll start to release not only emotionally, but in your body, you'll start to release some of the toxic stress. You'll start to release some of these chemicals that have locked up energy, even for your own yoga poses.
It's no doubt affecting your practice. If that's in the back of your mind.
It does.
That just those little
sometimes, and I'm just like, when you don't feel like you belong somewhere, it definitely affects you. And it's like I try not to let it affect me, but there's moments that I'm just like, why am I here? And then when you try to create spaces people like you, it's an issue.
Right there, you said to yourself, you said something very important. You said, when you think, why am I here? I teach this method called Tea Time, which T is an acronym for thoughts, emotions, actions. Thoughts is the T, E is the emotions, and A is actions. So that thought, you know, like, why am I here? Or do I belong here? Or I don't think I belong here, releases a feeling. And that feeling that you feel is isolation, fear, doubt. You might feel a cascade of feelings. Now, what happens is that a neuron or a thought that wires together will wire together, right? So as soon as you feel that first, you have that first thought, like, why am I here? Or do I belong here? Your mind is going to be like, okay, we know that book. Pull out the book. Why am I here? And it's going to read the whole story. Why am I here? Nobody wants me here. Look at all these white people. And the stories are going to go on. And your thoughts are going to, it's going to pull back from the catacombs of your mind that very scary story that you might have had the first time you realized you were the only Black girl in an all-white classroom. It's going to bring back all of those different things that you learned in those instances. And you're going to feel all these feelings. And then you're going to ask yourself these questions around how you should act. And you're going to be like, oh, should I retreat? Depending on what the strongest practice you've had in responding to those feelings is what kind of actions you're going to take. So if you practice, you know, feeling a feeling of doubt and then telling yourself, this is not a feeling that affirms who I am. And so I get to think of another thing. I get to experience myself differently. Then you will act differently. So then you would be able to say to that person, excuse me, I don't know if you noticed, but my things are still here, which means I'm still here. And allow that person to respond.
Okay.
And I would definitely say, absolutely, thank you so much for sharing the teas.
Tea time.
I have so many questions about tea time. But absolutely. Whenever you're making a change, especially when it comes to an interpersonal relationship, you can't control the variables of another human being. Right? And most of the time, these things are like thoughtless, especially we're all American. We can be selfish and thoughtless too. But there is subtle power dynamics that you're acknowledging here. And so I always like to say, in personal and professional relationships, it's a power thing, right? You know, and so like, she is exerting her power over you and you are allowing it. But we're all peers, so we're equal relationships. It never has to be nasty. It could just be like kind of like this reaction has an equal and opposite reaction. All change happens from the top down, from the leadership, right? And so if you believe in your head, just as like you said, TEA, from your head that you belong there, you know, like there's nothing wrong with pushing back. You know, there's nothing wrong with just being like, oh, that's weird. You know, like, oh no, honey, mine is here. You know, you have every right. You have to believe that you belong there. You know, because that's the thing. I mean, I feel like without having to aggressively stand up for yourself, you can own your space, you know, and then they get used to it. Then they have to respect you, you know, and because, you know, Oprah says this all the time, you teach people how to treat you.
Yeah. You know, that's the major lesson of racism. Racism's big lesson to those impacted by racism is that there are people who do not belong and where they don't belong is in human beingness. They don't belong in humanity, being fully human, and the equation or the fraction of that continues to, you know, diminish as you get darker.
It's so true. And so, I feel like I have to be so much whiter because I'm dark skinned. You know, like, yeah, we all have our little Hillary Banks voice going on, you know, but like,
oh yeah,
right? We all do that. But I feel for like, yeah, me personally, first generation, like on a scale from like Don Lemon to Migos, I'm like a solid four. Like, I'm a proud Oreo, you know? And so I feel like I have to occupy both spaces. But it creeps in where you're like, who am I? What am I going to allow? What am I going to respect for? You know? Because like, if you love being black, you want them to love it too, but they don't always.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, I think that that's also like internalized racism. Internalized racism teaches you to validate yourself
and their opinion of
and their and yeah, yeah, and that their opinion of you matters. Where this is just, this is a sound, this is an effective voice that we're using. The sounds that we're using, the way we're talking right now, is creating a sense of belonging and soothing and clarity and comfort. And then we have other voices that we use when we want to get hype and we try to let you know who we really are. And those voices are very effective for other things. And they get us pumped. They get us excited. They make us feel like we belong. We're connecting. It's our, you know, colloquial way of engaging. Yeah. And that's how, you know, that's how we talk. Right. You know, but there, you know, we know that sound is powerful. So using the voice, our presence is powerful, posture is powerful, breathing is powerful, you know, decoration, self-decoration is powerful, self-affirmation is powerful, all these different things that we do that we do to celebrate, elaborate, accentuate ourselves are all, they're tools. They're just tools. And racism will teach us that if we're doing things to elaborate or accentuate or, you know, establish ourselves in certain ways, it's because we're trying to be what is established, what is elaborate, what is wealthy, which is associated with white. But that's not the reality. That's not the truth. Like, you are glorious right now. Like, you're radiant, you're beautiful just because of who you are and what you've decided to put on your face. Yes. Like, you know, you naturally bring that forth. And I think, like, because any kind of like striving for excellence or wonder or beauty or power, even if it's self-power in your own body, then it's like, oh, that person is thinking they're better than, so then the next one above that is they're thinking they're white. And that is racism. That's racism, 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 over and over and over. Whoa. This constant comparison, because everybody is not created equal in racism. So there has to be a better than in racism. Mm.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I don't want to drop these mics. Because like I said, this is a Sono show. But if I will, I'm going to get a fake one for the next one. So you can drop it. So my guest co-host, will you come with heat like that? That's a tea. Thank you so much, Takeisha. Regine, was that helpful?
That was very helpful.
Yoga is all about health and healing. And also shout out, I mean, we don't want to encourage like segregation or whatever, but there is a really fantastic yoga studio in Brooklyn called Heal House.
Nice. Yes.
Heal House. I've actually been there.
It's beautiful. Shout out to Heal House. Black owned.
I met the owners. They're beautiful.
Black bodies. Black joy, like you said, accentuate, celebrate, all of that. But again, you can do that wherever you are, and you should. And I really truly believe that like once it comes like from your head all the way down to your feet through downward dog, people will love it too. Like if you really, I mean, you know, they have, just because they have a problem with you, that is not your problem. You know, like you do belong there. And you're like, once that really comes out of your cells, you know, you will be accepted. And you are going to be running these classes soon.
And hey, come on and teach. Yeah. Yes, and build community and speak your truth. Yeah. If you feel like there's someone that you just want to speak to and share that with, why not? You know, you get to speak your truth and, you know, bring it up to the owners of one of the studios maybe and talk to them about building diversity and inclusion within yoga. You know, the voices need to continue to be amplified, voices like yours, Regine. So,
and how would they know if you don't tell them?
Yeah.
If not you, who? If not now, when? This is how it starts. And luckily, we are in a time where there are more and more white allies who are willing to have the conversations, be called out on their things. And we've seen a lot of things. And, you know, we have to take help where we can get it. We can't do it alone. We didn't cause racism, so we can't solve racism. Mm-hmm. You know, we do need the people with the power to kind of, like, you know, lift us up and stand on the lines with us. Yeah. So, yeah.
And you have the power.
Oh, say it again.
Come on. You have the power.
You have the power. Downward dog.
Come on, oh, like frog pose.
Yeah, we don't really.
I'm like, my favorite pose is Savasana.
We were talking about waist trainers before this, so we're not doing no damn yoga.
I'm trying to snatch that waist. Okay. Snatch, 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 snatch.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your truth with us, and we hope that you leave it all on the mat next time.
Oh, nice. Yes, leave it on the mat.
And don't take it with you. You can't take it with you where you're going, so unbow your head, little sister.
Oh, nice.
thank you so much, Regine.
Thank you so much.
Namaste.
Oh, namaste.
Ooh.
And Black Power.
Right.
Always. Always. All right, take care, love. Thank you for calling in.
Bye.
Oh, what a treat she was. So thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to help that young queen with her crown pose.
She helped me. She brought forth some really important things. Like,
oh, girl, you were dropping all sorts of knowledge. I had to duck for cover.
My source.
Thank you, source. Thank you, ancestors. Thank you, Takesha. Thank you so much for joining
pleasure.
Us.
My pleasure. Thank
Be
you,
Chain. B. It was a treat.
What a treat.
So
yes.
Thank you so much for joining us on our inaugural episode. I was actually really scared, you know, because, like, literally, I was like, let's play the race card. I'm scared to talk about it. You know, I don't
I thought I was getting a little too much in the there for a second.
It's never enough. I have more questions.
I was like, wait a minute. We're going to move on.
Why
too far.
Not? No such thing. Girl, this is just the invisible internet. None of this is
I real. Know, right?
But yes. Thank you so much again for joining me, too. I really enjoyed the conversation. And if you join the conversation, please subscribe to Be the Change. We hope you'll join us next time. And remember that life is change. Change is good. And life is good. And
nice.
If you'd like to have a, we call this a power half hour, power hour. If you'd like for your own power hour, you can sign up for The Difference, or you can get connected with a live human therapist within 30 minutes or less. You can sign up at thedifference.com. And we'll catch you next time on Be the Change. This is the Be the Change podcast, recorded at Sonos Studios in New York City. Thanks for listening.